gin with an alcoholic taste.
Yeah. A great 4 weeks. I thought long and hard about what I was going to say tonight. Don't remember any of it. That's the way that usually goes. I think I've forgotten to say this for a couple of weeks. I know I said it the first week. My sponsor would probably have scolded me had he been here in his gentle, loving, sponsor-like way. I've been continuously sober since February 13th of 2000, thanks to the presence of a loving God in my life. AA didn't get me sober. God got me sober. AA doesn't keep me sober. God keeps me sober. AA gives me a place to talk about that, to share that with people, to hear about other people's experience with whatever power they've come in touch with. But you guys are human. Can't do it for me. I have people that know me better than you know me and love me more than you love me that could not get me sober. But there's no chance you could. But there was something else here that you guys helped me get in touch with that has done the trick for me. I'm going to talk with you a little bit about the last couple of steps here, 10, 11, and 12, that are really, for me, when it says in the 10th step in the big book, we've entered the world of the Spirit. It's one of the few sentences in this book that I don't fully agree with. I believe that I've been in the world of the Spirit my whole life. I just finally woke up to where I'd been all along. You know, like I'm here. Like maybe I consciously entered the world of the Spirit. That might be an accurate way of putting it. And I got to tell you, this time of year, too, is kind of weird for me. Anybody that's been sober a year or more knows we can get a little tweaky around our anniversaries. And I've wondered about that for a while. Why is it that some of us get kind of tweaky around our anniversary? And somebody pointed out to me a few years ago, it's not just the anniversary of your sobriety, it's the anniversary of your bottom. It was about 12 years ago. Right around this time of year, when my life was just falling apart. And it'd be easy for me to just go into sharing my experience with 10, 11, and 12 tonight, and this lofty spiritual principles and practices that are in our book and that we have a chance to practice. But there might be some new people in the room that if I just talk about that, you're going to wonder, well, how the hell is this ever going to help me? So I just want to recap for you real quickly. February of 2000. Kitchen full of garbage, a house full of garbage, pizza boxes, takeout containers, beer cans, dog hair. There was a path from the kitchen door to the couch to the stairs to go upstairs in the middle of all this garbage. It looked like someone had taken a dumpster and just emptied it into my house. My blinds were drawn. No one had been in my house. No other living human being had been in my home for months. I could not allow anyone in there. I would leave for work every single day, and I'd shower, and I'd shave, or sometimes I'd just shave. Sometimes I'd just, I don't know, put a hat on, and try to put a brave face out there for the world, but I was living in hell. When I got to the end of my drinking, I did not try to find an answer to my drinking. I was trying to find a way to kill myself without leaving a mess. I wouldn't bother anybody else. It became incredibly clear to me in January of 2000 I was a bother to everybody I knew. I was just a burden. That's it. I wanted a way to check out without being one more problem. I didn't want to leave a mess. And what saved me on February 13th, actually February 12th, Saturday, was sitting on my living room floor realizing if I don't want to leave a mess, it's not just about the body that I'm going to leave behind. I got to clean this house first. Oh my God. There's got to be an easier, softer way. You know? By the grace of God, I ended up the next evening in an AA meeting, just out of ideas, just completely bankrupt, no idea how to live. I knew I couldn't drink anymore, but I also had tried not drinking, and if you're an alcoholic like me, just not drinking hurts. It hurts. It's spiritually agony to just not drink and have nothing else in its place. I got to start on a journey through these steps, and I got to write an honest inventory, and I got to make amends, and I got to do those things, not because I became some wonderfully spiritual dude that cared so much about other people, but because I was convinced that if I didn't, I would die of alcoholism. I think that my relationship with a God of my understanding and practicing certain basic principles on a daily basis are not a matter of comfort And they're not a matter of convenience, they're a matter of survival. I don't do this stuff, I will drink and die. I am absolutely convinced of that. Between the experiences I had with alcohol and my inability to think straight prior to the first drink, my thinking goes sideways, and I drink. I don't trust my brain anymore. And I've seen enough other people in this fellowship do the same thing. So by the time I got into making my amends, I had a friend point out to me, because I thought I was supposed to make all my amends and then I could go to 10. That would have been a long day in school. It took me a while to clean up some wreckage. But a friend of mine pointed out to me, it says here on page 84 of our big book, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. That word as. So glad she showed me that. But I thought I was supposed to do this after I cleaned up the past. I gotta finish 9 then, because every other step was like that. I gotta finish a step before I go on to the next step. I don't do my 5th until I finish the inventory, etc., etc. But here, I was told, no, there's exceptions to everything. While I'm cleaning up the wreckage, while I'm making my amends, I get to start living in 10, 11, and 12. And my sponsor went over the directions for this with me. And it says, continue to take personal inventory. I know people that learned how to write inventory in 4, and they do it differently in 10. They do it just in their heads. They just do it, they just call somebody and talk it out or something like that. And I can tell you, I have experience with that. And for me, it doesn't work as effectively as doing it exactly the way I learned it in 4. When I get resentful, I write resentment inventory. When I get fearful, I write fear inventory. I do that because it works. I don't do it because the book says it. I don't do it because my sponsor told me to. I do it because I tried it and it works better than any other method I tried for getting rid of resentment and fear. It just works for me. If something else works for you, ignore what I say. Do what you do. This works for me. It says here, my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It's not an overnight matter. It should continue for my lifetime. And I'm supposed to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It doesn't say to wait for them. It says to watch for them. They're coming. They're coming. I'm gonna go home in a little bit to a wife I love dearly and 3 wonderful little girls. And I can just get filled with resentment and fear in the middle of a house where I'm surrounded by love. I don't know about you. I don't have to live in a hostile universe to experience resentment and fear. You can put me in the middle of a loving family on Thanksgiving, and I am a resentment and fear generating machine. I just make them out of nothing. The other day, my wife and I had DVR'd a program that we both wanted to watch. And she was doing some stuff on the computer, and I started watching it because I tend to be a little selfish. And I was like, oh, and then she came in, and I rewound it, and we watched it. And about 10 minutes into it, we realized it was getting late, and we were tired. We were going to go to bed. Okay, we'll watch it tomorrow. Next night, same thing. She's doing a couple of things on the computer, paying some bills, and I start watching a little more of it. And then she comes in. She says, you're watching it with it? I said, well, I'll rewind it. And I start rewinding it, And so I start from the beginning. She goes, I saw this already. I said, I know. Let me fast forward. And I hit the play button again. She said, I saw this already. I said, I know. And about the third time she said that, I turned to her and I said, you know, I'm trying to be thoughtful here, and I'm trying to get this. I'm trying to catch you up to what we saw and everything else. And I know you saw some of it, and I wish you'd stop barking at me. And she had the reaction to that most normal human beings would have. And I said, I'm going to go downstairs and work on a couple things. And I went, and the next morning I got up. We didn't watch the rest of the show. She might have. I don't know. I went down to the cave down in the basement and sawed some stuff and screwed some stuff and hammered some stuff. I have a lot of abused wood in my basement. And I got up the next morning, and I always get up early. I really like quiet in the morning. And if I get up before the house full of wonderful people in my family, I get to have that quiet. And I'm sitting there, and I'm still going back over. She barked at me, and she yelled at me, and she did. And I was trying to be nice, and she didn't appreciate. Nobody appreciated me. I'm so unappreciated. And I said, geez, I... This happened about 12 hours ago. I think I got a resentment going here. I better write this out. So I wrote out a four-column resentment inventory. I wrote the first three columns. I said that beautiful little prayer that's in our book that gets me free of what they did. And I started looking, well, where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking? Where am I at fault? Where am I to blame? What are my mistakes here? Something occurred to me. Now, I've been trying to live this way for a while, and what I'm going to share with you is a fundamentally simple thing, and it just occurred to me the other day. I was a little embarrassed. I was like, wow, I bet you I'm going to share this with a room full of people, or they're all going to go like, yeah, we learned that in first grade. And I'm like, okay. I learned it Saturday morning. My wife had raised her voice. She had barked at me. I didn't like that. That makes me angry when someone talks to me like that. I bet it makes you angry, too, when someone talks to you like that. So she did something that made me angry. But she did not do anything to keep me angry. That was me. Had I been angry and even taken a moment to pray, my head probably would have popped out of my butt. Had I, an hour later, said, okay, I'm still stewing over this. Let me sit down and write this out. Let me call someone and share it. Let me pray about this. Let me do the things that are described here. You know, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. I try calling my sponsor and say, John, I got a resentment. He says, did you pray? I said, not yet. Click. Call him back. Why'd you hang up on me? He says, I want you to follow directions. The first thing it says is we ask God to remove it. Don't call me with your problems. You go to God with your problems. You get your answers from God. You call me back. We talk about what you think you heard. So we can clarify a little bit. Because this thing here does a real good impression of God. I don't know about... Well, Jim, you should explain to your wife the proper way to speak to people. Yeah, that's not God. That's me. So, we discuss them with someone immediately. My friend Gary refers to that as check it out with somebody with skin on. And then we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. I went to my wife that morning when she got up. My sponsor told me that the best amends are hand in hand with real action. So I had a cup of coffee made just the way she likes it in my hand when I went to her. Handed it to her and I said, can we talk about last night? She said, sure. With that look on her face like, this better be good. And I said, our conversation last night, I got a little upset. I said, but I stayed upset because I was acting like a child. I was just throwing a tantrum in my head and went downstairs and I pouted and sulked like a little boy. And I cheated you and me out of an evening to have together, enjoy each other's company, watch TV together, and eat together. I can't give you that night back, but I can tell you that I saw what I did, and I'll try not to do it again. He said, hold that thought. I said, all right. And then it says we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. A lot of times that's another alcoholic. A lot of times this is the part I miss. My sponsor's real good about reminding me of this. Okay, so I took the inventory, I prayed about it, I talked to somebody else about it, I made amends. And then I think, okay, now I'm done because I made amends. No. Last and perhaps the most important part, because my difficulty begins with selfishness. If I really want to get free of my difficulty, I've got to follow it all the way through. Resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Who can I help? And here's my beautiful wife standing in front of me. And I said, you know, it'd be really helpful to me right now if I could be helpful to you. Said, I got a list. Well, Saturday morning. Of course she does. A honey-do list. And I spent my day making my wife happy. Because the day before, I had spent a couple hours making her unhappy. Then it says here, love and tolerance of others is our code. My sponsor smiled and said, it's not supposed to be a secret code, Jim. Should be visible. People should know that you're trying to be loving and tolerant. Okay. It says here, it talks about the new attitude we're going to have towards alcohol and that we're going to react sanely and normally. And this new attitude has come without any thought or effort on our part. And I got to tell you, that irritated me. And I said to my sponsor, it says here, what do you mean without any thought or effort on our part? I wrote this thorough inventory. I've been traveling around, driving around, getting on planes, going and finding people that I hurt, looking up stuff on the internet, calling on people, making appointments. I've been busting my butt to set things right and to get my life in order. How can this say without any thought or effort on our part? And he said, well, look at the whole sentence. He says, the new attitude towards alcohol has been the result of no thought or effort on our part. How much of your thought and effort that you just described was about booze? None of it. How much of it was about your relationship with God and your fellows? All of it. that's the difference between recovery and sobriety. A lot of people in AA will chase sobriety, the absence of alcohol. And they might get it, but they might get it at the expense of any real peace and any real freedom. But if you will pursue a spiritual awakening through these 12 steps and deal with your relationships with your fellows and with God, a side effect is you'll never drink again. A side effect of the steps is I don't have to drink again. The main effect is I'm awake and I'm aware today. 11th step talks about prayer and meditation. My sponsor was quick to point out the sentence that begins on the bottom of 85, better men than we are using it constantly. And I thought that he was, you know, being humble and making sure he was knocking me down to humble too by saying that. And then he also pointed out another way of looking at that. He said, you want to be a better man today? Use prayer constantly. Better man than you are right now will emerge if you will use this constantly. Prayer and meditation. Throughout the day, it's suggested that I'm asking God, now what? One of my favorite forms of the third step prayer I use a lot during the day. Put me in, coach. I'm your boy. Where do you want me? I know I want to play shortstop and lead off, you know, but you might need me to play right field or maybe just sit the bench. I don't know. Put me in, coach. I'm your boy. Throughout the day. Gives me all kinds of wonderful prayers that to use here in my 11th step in the morning with my morning meditation. Ask God to direct my thinking. Ask that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. My sponsor said, are you divorced? I said, yeah, I am. He says, you've got an ex-wife. I said, yeah. He says, is she gone from the world? I said, no. He says, well, same thing here. You're going to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, but they're still going to live in the world with you. And you may still have contact with them from time to time, and you might want to keep in mind that being divorced from these things does not mean they are out of your life forever. It's your relationship with them has changed. You're no longer married to them. I was married to self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. Now we're, I don't know, we hang out a lot. We ain't married anymore. That's good. We're divorced. I can ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or a decision when I'm not sure what to do. Not just in my morning prayer, when I'm making a plan for the day, but during the day. I was driving back from Connecticut one time with my friend Joanna. We had gone to High Watch Farms, I think it's called. There's a recovery center out there. And we're driving back these back roads into upstate New York, and we were lost. I mean, we were, like, really lost. Mostly because I had told her, oh, I've been over out this way before. I know a shortcut. So we're, like, really lost in these back roads. Eastern New York, just outside of Connecticut, and I come to this intersection, and it's really dark, and there's no street lights, and there's this blinking red light, and it's blinking yellow the other way, so I got to stop, and Joanna says, well, which way? And I said, I'm not sure. I said, I think it's a right, and she said out loud, God, please, give us a sign. And I took a right, and my headlights go across this billboard, big white billboard, black letters. Do you have any idea where you're going? And it was signed, God. Some church had put this billboard up there, you know? I said, I think this is the right way. We just kept going. You'd be surprised, man. Ask for direction. Two things I have to ask for on a regular basis. I need direction. I need power. I need a map. Where am I going? And I need gas. And I need an engine. I don't want to do this on my power. And I sure don't want to pick the direction. It says early in our book that I can form a relationship with God upon simple and understandable terms, and God must know I like to laugh because he just does goofy stuff with me all the time like that. I really enjoy that. So 10 and 11 on a regular basis, trying to do this stuff, trying to just be awake. I know that I'm not awake when you're talking to me and I'm struggling to get what you're saying to me because I'm trying to listen to you and think about something else that I got to do later. I know that I'm not awake when I sit here and Tommy asks for a little bit of quiet at the beginning of the meeting and I'm noisy on the inside, full of thoughts and what am I going to say to impress these people tonight? How am I going to get them to like me? How am I going to make sure I don't embarrass myself in front of all? I've done nothing but embarrass myself for the past 25 minutes. Hey, what a goofball I am and how pathetically desperate I am for power in my life other than my own. Mine just isn't enough. Just isn't. I'm not capable of being the kind of husband my wife deserves on my power. Just not. I'm not capable of being the kind of son, the kind of brother that people in my life deserve on my power. I'll fail them. I know that. But I've found that since I started living this way and practicing these things, God doesn't fail them using me to be a good brother and a good son, a good father, and a good husband. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes. I do. I made one last weekend. I make them on a regular basis. But I've found that the people that love me really appreciate that when I make mistakes, I'm given power and direction to come and set things right with them. Just on a regular basis doing that stuff. And when I go to bed at night and I do that review of the day and I ask myself, you know, all these different questions, was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? My sponsor said, if you want to write this stuff out, you can, but you might notice they're yes or no questions. Was I resentful? Yes. Was I selfish? Yes. Was I dishonest? Yes. I almost said no. Then I would have had to say yes later. Was I afraid? Yeah, I was afraid to tell you that I'd been dishonest. Do I owe an apology? Usually. I usually step on at least one toe a day. At least. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? And if the answer to that is yes, I might want to give that some thought tomorrow morning in my morning meditation. Were we kind and loving towards all? I got to tell you, I finally hit a day. This was a couple of years ago. I called my sponsor. I was all excited. I said, my nightly review last night, I got to that question, were we kind and loving toward all? And the answer was yes. Finally. Finally. Every single person. I swear to God, I went over like my commute, everything. I was kind and loving towards everybody. Finally. And he said, even in your thoughts? Oh. Still room for growth. Well, I'm going to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Okay. So, I got a minute to talk to you about step 12. Yeah. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I tried to carry this message to alcoholics. Here's my message. If you are as hopeless as me, I don't have the answer. I have directions where you can get an answer that'll make sense to you. It was written down in a book. I think that it's been written down in lots of books. This one was put into drunk words. I understand this one. I think it's available in other places to other people. When I sponsor, I use this book as a template. And I found out the value of a template just doing some basic construction work with some folks. Guy made a template for me. He said, we need 32 boards this length. And he said, let's make a template. And he made one the right length. And he says, just use this. And about the fourth board, he came over to check and see how I was doing. And he says, where's the template? I said, oh, it's over there. I'm using one of the boards I cut now. He said, no, don't do that. I said, why not? He says, because the thickness of the blade, you can lose or gain an eighth of an inch or a sixteenth of an inch, depending on the blade. And if you lose an eighth of an inch, and then use that board to cut with, and you lose another eighth. After four or five boards, you're going to lose a half inch, an inch and a half, and everything's going to be screwed up. Use the templates. He taught me something. There's a spiritual principle in that. So when I go through the 12 steps with someone, I use this book as a guide for our journey together. This isn't a Bible. This isn't hard and fast. I've found too many people with too many different experiences with what's in here to think that the way that I did is the right way. Matter of fact, I found something earlier today. I was looking with someone. I love this. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If I preach this book at you and tell you this is the only way, I'm contradicting the very book that I'm preaching to you. Because the book says there isn't just one way. There's lots of paths. Dr. Bob talked about the spokes on a wheel, all heading for the same hub. We can call it different things, but it's the same hub. Then to say that my spoke is better than your spoke is just folly. How could I possibly know that? So I work with guys and I use this. I got to tell you, too, I have sponsored women. If I am going to sponsor a woman, if a woman asks me to go through to work with her, two things have to happen. I have to have a conversation with my wife about that. And she has to come over and meet my family. And we do that step work at my house. My sponsor made it clear to me. He says, you don't sponsor women. You don't sponsor men either. Sponsor alcoholics. Help drunks. Any drunk that you help that come to you. You don't turn them away. Now, I can also tell you, too, just for the sake of just good sense, when we've gotten to a fifth step, there were parts that it was just not appropriate for them to share that with me. And we made sure that there was a sober woman that could hear that part of the fifth step. And that just made good sense. But I don't turn people away that come to me for help. practice these principles in all our affairs. If I'm not having fun, I'm not doing that. Yeah, this is fun stuff. I've entered the world of the Spirit. It's a fun place to live. Most of my life was just... Well, I heard a guy named Chuck C. Some of you guys and gals might have heard of Chuck Chamberlain. He said that he used to live in a world... What was it he said? I used to believe that I had to outthink, outperform, and outmaneuver everybody around me to eke out a miserable existence in a hostile universe. Where I used to live, I don't know about you, I lived there. I was even renting space to other people, they could live there with me. I don't live there anymore. I can go back to the stuff on page 52, and if any of that stuff is cropping up in my life again, I'm not practicing certain principles. I have to take a look at that. Page 52 is a wonderful benchmark for me. Is, am I really free? Am I really at peace? And page 83 and 84, the promises, which are like the polar opposites of that, that's where I can take a look to say, you know, am I really on the beam here? Going out the way that God would have them go. That doesn't mean that my life is always happy. My sponsor made it very clear to me that awakening does not mean I never have sadness. It doesn't mean that I never have grief. A part of being awake is I am available to the full spectrum of the human experience. People I love are going to die. Tragedies are going to occur. I find that the more I open myself up to grief and sadness and despair, I open up at the other end to joy, and vice versa. I've got to open up both ends of it. I've got to be available to all of it. Practicing this stuff on a regular basis, having a chance to talk to people like you about it, laugh about it. Just take a look at the god-awful mess that I still make when I try to run the show. That one simple sentence, first of all, we had to quit playing God every day. Every day. I wake up God every day. I'm God again. And I got to quit doing that every day. You guys have been absolutely wonderful in your kind attention the past couple weeks. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this. If there's anybody here I can be helpful to, please let me know. Thank you very much.